As a companion to last week's discussion of Gustave Flaubert's famous novel Madame Bovary, it seems appropriate to talk this week about a work by another 19th century French novelist whose name is often placed beside Flaubert's, and that is Émile Zola. Now, Zola is perhaps best known for his public letter from 1898, J'accuse, written in defence of the imprisoned Alfred Dreyfus and condemning the anti-Semitism of the government of the day. But Zola was also the author of the monumental series of novels, Les Rougon-Macquart, in which he conceived a form of realistic writing known as naturalism, where he envisaged the novel as a kind of scientific laboratory for the study of human behaviour. Now, I must admit to having decidedly mixed feelings about the success or otherwise of Zola's works. At their best, they are extraordinary feats of observation. At their worst, they seem to me little more than melodramatic forays into soft porn. When the Marxist critic George Lukács writes of Zola that, and I quote, "perhaps no one has painted more colourfully and suggestively the outer trappings of modern life," end of quote, he is clearly damning the French writer with extremely faint praise, for he is suggesting that, unlike a writer like Thomas Hardy, for example, who tries to understand the motivations and contradictions of his characters, Zola finds himself trapped within the bombastic monumentalism, that's Lukács' words, of the naturalist project. Now, in some respects, Lukács is as guilty as Zola in making overly sweeping brushstrokes in his analysis. For in a novel like L'Assommoir, one does have a sense of individual suffering and complexity within the broader study of alcoholism and poverty in an urban landscape. Or in another novel like Nana, the empathy for an individual woman forced into prostitution does at times come through more strongly than the wider aims of Zola's quasi-scientific project. Now, the 13th novel in the series, Germinal, published in 1895, is unequivocally one of his greatest novels in its harsh depiction of miners' strikes during the 1860s. And I would argue that such outer trappings are essential to give a monumental but not bombastic sense of the crowd, of the seething mass of humanity that crushes the individual. Without such a macro description, a broad overview, we cannot fully grasp the intensity of the individual's micro struggle against larger forces. And in this respect, the magnificent opening pages of the novel fulfil Zola's desire to achieve this combination of micro and macro. While Zola researched and documented the mining industry of the time, giving precise details of dimensions of mine shafts, machinery used, tunnelling techniques and working conditions that achieve a certain kind of realism, he was able in the opening to superimpose symbolic meaning upon the as yet unnamed individual, whom we later learn is Étienne Lantier, swallowed up in a hallucinatory vision. The novel begins with, and I quote, "a solitary figure being consumed by," and again I quote, "the murky waves of this world of shadows." And it is this placing of the individual within a wider landscape that allows the reader to be mindful of the personal as well as the impersonal. Now, although Lukács is perhaps justified in describing characters within Zola's novels as tiny, haphazard people, this is surely precisely the point that Zola is trying to make at the beginning of Germinal. While the overarching symbolism in a later Zola novel like La Bête Humaine is both crass and verging on the pornographic, such monumentalism in Germinal is surely essential to both the structure and worldview contained within the book. Although documentary description in the novel is crucial, we shouldn't forget that Zola makes use of much more traditional narrative techniques. Etienne, as the work's central figure, plays an essential role in structuring the novel. There is a symmetry to the way that Etienne's arrival at the beginning is matched by his departure at the end. The imagery of regeneration at the end of the novel, and I quote, "the sap flowed upwards and spilled over in soft whispers," shows that Zola was not averse to the beauty of poetic as well as documentary description. Moreover, a character like the fellow miner Bonnemar plays both a symbolic and narrative function in alerting Etienne and the reader to the history of many years of suffering and death within the mining industry. Bonnemar's surname, literally meaning good death, which he acknowledges to be a nickname, is not a coincidence. In this scene, Zola gives his customary physiological description of Bonnemar combined with symbolism. Thus, while he has a massive neck and bandy legs and long arms and square hands, these are all quotations, he is then compared to, and I quote, "a stone statue seeming not to notice the cold, like a monument to all miners who have become impervious to the hardship of their surroundings." But Bonnemar also is used as a narrative device to give the reader as much historical information as possible at an early stage of the novel, prompted by Etienne's question, "Have you been working at the mine for long?" Now, for all of Zola's proclaimed new approach to literature, it is a remarkably clumsy and old-fashioned narrative device. But perhaps the most arresting narrative technique is achieved through the way in which Etienne becomes a different kind of narrator or even novelist himself. The stories that he tells others show both the seductions and drawbacks of persuasive rhetoric. Although Etienne gets his facts mixed up and sometimes cannot find the right words, talking, and I quote, "endlessly in increasingly passionate tones," end of quote, he is able to create new worlds and suggest the possibility of hope within the grim world that is depicted in the rest of the novel. Thus, although the wife of a fellow miner, known as La Maheude, tries to block her ears from Etienne's own narrative, which she dismisses as fairy tales, we find that little by little, this is a quote, "little by little, the charm started to work on her too." We can perhaps most usefully see Zola's own novelistic project in this light. Could he have been employing his own brand of Flaubertian irony here, presaging the failure of his so-called scientific project? Because for all its seeming objectivity, Germinal is memorable precisely for the seduction of its storytelling, the vividness of its imagery, and the mythic status of its symbolism.